Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National People Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. That great cruise ship created by John Stadtmiller, and we don't have thousands of people locked on board, locked in their rooms waiting to catch coronavirus. Does this make any sense at all? No, this is Freedom of Speech Central. It is a great ship of freedom of speech, and we're taking advantage of it with Mark Dankoff here, and we're also taking advantage of the co-certified app so that when we do get locked onto a great cruise ship with thousands of people infected with the coronavirus, at least we can eat non-kosher certified bat soup. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Well, it's great to be on with you, and there are all kinds of things to discuss. I think on the basis of the way we plugged this show and the timely character of the topic for this show, it might be time to take a look at the longtime relationship that has become increasingly obvious between Pete Buttigieg and the Israeli lobby and with people who create software to count votes in elections who have overt ties to Israel. Because now we are being told that there's a possibility that on Super Tuesday here in Texas, there may not be results for people to take a look at that very night. There's a dispute between the Secretary of State of Texas on that issue and several people with close ties to Pete Buttigieg in the Democratic Party establishment. One is Austin Mayor Steve Adler. The other one is Glenn Maxey, who's a longtime LGBTQ activist in the Democratic Party in the state of Texas. So this is all very curious business, but we go back as far as April to when I first became aware of just how deep Buttigieg's ties were to the Israeli lobby. And there have been a series of things that have developed since then where I thought we'd just take people through a few articles and then open it up for possible conversation.
That's right. And you get those articles on nationalbugle.com, which is also where you get the co-certified app. And, of course, you can click on nationalbugle.com, get to my archives. And from my archives, which are on republicbroadcasting.org, you can go on and donate to republicbroadcasting.org. Okay, so let's start with the articles first and then get into Pete Buttigieg.
Yes, we start looking at Mayor Pete's background as it relates to things Israeli and as it relates to things that are pro-Israel and foreign policy. We go back to the 16th of April. At that time, I became aware of an article on the American Jewish Congress Global Voice page entitled Mayor Pete's Takeaways from His Trip to Israel. By the way, we have in our description of this show that's already up under the political section or the election section. If you go down two or three spaces, you will see the promo for this show with all of these links added in one place. I will add them individually later, but for listeners, you can certainly copy and paste these URLs as you so desire from the show description we have up on the big board at nationalbugle.com and see these things for yourself. Then, curiously enough, on October 21st, CNBC's Tucker Higgins had a post entitled Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg and his wife privately recommend staff hires to Pete Buttigieg. That's another interesting factor in all of this. Then on the 30th of December, the articulation of the background of this guy Buttigieg with Israel started becoming more specific. Samuel D. Finkelstein, note the last name, folks, writing in the Gray Zone.
Not to be confused with Norman Finkelstein, who is the anti-Zionist.
Yes. And in the case of Samuel D. Finkelstein, in the Gray Zone, he has one out there entitled The Spook's Choice. Coup plotters and CIA agents fill Pete Buttigieg's list of national security endorsers. So there's where we start getting into the whole business of Israel and the deep state.
Who fills the list? Who fills the list of national security endorsers?
Coup plotters and CIA agents.
Okay.
In other words, the title of the article says The Spook's Choice.
So
coup plotters and CIA agents.
In other words, the people who have brought us the Russia hoax and the Ukraine hoax and all of that. The deep state.
Exactly. So there on the 30th of December, coming to us from Finkelstein at the Gray Zone, is a very lengthy and articulate piece which starts putting together the pieces of why it is that all of these people involved in the deep state seem to think that Pete Buttigieg is absolutely wonderful, especially as it pertains to things Israeli. Then, of course, we get into the disaster of the Iowa caucus, don't we? We all know what happened there when there was a software glitch, supposedly, in Iowa that prevented Iowa Democrats from learning in a timely manner who exactly had won their caucus and who was coming out of Iowa with the most delegates. Now, this was became increasingly suspicious when Max Blumenthal followed up on Finkelstein's post of December 30th with one on the 4th of February entitled "Billionaire Pro-Israel Buttigieg Backer Seth Klarman Funds Group Behind Iowa's Disastrous Voting Application."
And so where have we heard Seth Klarman before? Because he's a big deep pockets money Jew, right? Was he one of the top contributors to Hillary? Wasn't he on that list that David Duke always reads?
Very strong links to Hillary Clinton historically as well. You're absolutely correct about that. And then that post was followed by one that took me a few days to stumble upon from the 5th of February. This comes to us from Alexa Ura, U.R.A. of the Texas Tribune. Quote, "New Texas election process has Democrats expecting a delay in Super Tuesday delegate totals." So that's another piece of this interesting puzzle that seems to be emerging as we start looking at the facts of some of these articles. And fascinating that when we look at Buttigieg, again, he has two people in Texas that he seems to have a particularly a close political relationship with. One is Austin Mayor Steve Adler. There is a Texas Tribune article
I just want to, because every now and then we get a little bit of a glitch and don't hear a word or a syllable here and there. Austin Mayor Steve Adler.
Adler, A-D-L-E-R.
Okay.
Adler is, according to the Texas Tribune, helping Buttigieg court America. So that is an interesting connection. When we also discuss this Glenn Maxey, M-A-X-E-Y, a longtime LGBTQ and Democrat activist here in Texas with big-time connections to the Democratic Party officially, who also seems to be very, very friendly both with Buttigieg and with Steve Adler. Mm-hmm. And when we look at some of these rather coincidental links, we then, of course, follow this with the 8th of February when Emily Stewart from Vox reports that, quote, "acronym is the dark group behind the Iowa caucus application meltdown." Acronym is apparently the umbrella organization, according to Emily Stewart, that oversees the production of this shadow software with all of the political and money links. That is in turn linked to Seth Klarman, that is linked to what happened to Iowa, and that this has some very, very strong direct and indirect Israeli and Israeli lobby connections to this whole business of acronym as well as shadow. And I find that significant going back to that article of December 30th of Samuel D. Finkelstein in the Gray Zone. Quote, again, we'll mention that one again. "The spooked choice. Coup plotters and CIA agents filled Pete Buttigieg's list of national security endorsers." And then, of course, last but not least, the great Philip Giraldi, the longtime CIA station chief and contributor to the alt world and to the American Conservative and antiwar.com and all of the rest of them. Dr. Giraldi of the Council for the National Interest tells us in a rhetorical title, "Is Pete Buttigieg the Israeli lobby choice?" So that came to us on the 11th of February, just a couple of days ago. And when you go back between the 16th of April with this American Jewish Congress Global Voice piece that we noted at the top of the hour, and come all the way down to the 11th of February with the Giraldi Alt-World essay on Pete Buttigieg and the Israeli lobby, it begs the question here in Texas with these reports on these potential problems with Texas Democrats and their vote counting in the caucuses of March 3rd as to exactly what's going on here on top of what has already happened in Iowa. And is there subterfuge involved? We simply don't know, but we are raising the question because, frankly, when you go through all of these different articles that we have listed on the big board under the show description alone, it looks extremely dubious. And I think it's something that we need to keep our eyes on.
Yeah, and I just want to pause for a second and look at it. And you know, we're both old enough to remember the old-fashioned voting machines. And you've run for office and been involved in other campaigns. I've been involved in campaigns. I've watched votes being counted both with the old fashioned machines and with the you know, the newfangled digital stuff. The old fashioned machines that were pretty common, I guess different areas employed different machines, but what was pretty common were these. You'd walk into, there would be a mechanical machine, and there would be a curtain. It was kind of like a mobile telephone booth or something, but it had a curtain, and you'd pull the curtain shut, and there were little levers, and you'd pull down the lever next to the people you wanted to vote for, and then when you were done pulling down all the levers, there was a giant lever that you'd pull with your hand, and it would open up the curtain again, and it would record the votes by, I guess, punching holes into to a rolling piece of paper or something like that. It was something like that. And I remember in the 60s going in with my mom voting, and then, you know, 40, 50 years later voting myself. And the only thing that had changed is instead of at the very end, instead of a very big lever to pull, there was an electric button that you could push, and it would open the curtain for you. But it left a paper trail, and I don't remember the machines themselves causing problems. You know, in Chicago, you'd hear reports of dead people voting and whatnot, but the machines themselves, didn't seem to be any problem with them. And, it, you know, it's not a complicated thing to, because all you're doing is you're simply tallying votes. You're not even trying to match the vote with the voter. Like, for instance, 50 years ago, if you went into a supermarket, there were these NCR, National Cash Register machines, and people would, the clerks would punch in numbers, like, as if it was an adding machine, and it would be an adding machine, and it would tell you your price, but it wouldn't, what they have nowadays with the barcodes and everything, they can know exactly what you're purchasing, and maybe who's purchasing it and relate it. But of course, and that's interesting information for the people who run the supermarkets. But for our needs in terms of votes hasn't changed. We don't want, it's a secret ballot, so you're not supposed to know who voted for whom. So what are we getting out of the electronic machines that we weren't getting before? We're not getting quicker vote tallies, obviously. And we're not getting more faith in the elections. We don't have paper trails. So, you know, can somebody be faulted for wondering why it is that they have to be using, you know, proprietary software and electronic, you know, computerized voting machines, programmable voting machines, and then these apps in order to send the election results to central instead of telephoning them in? What are we getting? We're not getting quicker results. Can you blame anybody for not trusting the system?
Not at all. And when you look at this whole situation, again, the circumstances in Iowa look extremely suspicious. And as we look at all of the links that occur in these relationships that involve things Jewish, things homosexual, and things related to positioning a candidate who is in the back pocket of the Israeli lobby and who's gay, and yet who is vying for the so-called centrist vote in the Democratic Party, with the apparent weakening and about the demise of Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden, courtesy of both Iowa and New Hampshire, it now looks like you have Sanders on the one hand, who by Haaretz's own admission is the last of the Jewish Bolsheviks. So you have Sanders, who, of course, really appeals to many Jewish voters in the United States on the basis of his overall leftist orientation on social and economic issues. And yet it's obvious that the Israeli lobby is worried about Sanders, in regard to what he may support once he's elected, if he were to be elected. So that is starting to look like Buttigieg and Bloomberg are the establishment yes. Democrat alternatives to Sanders. That's the way this is beginning to play out.
With maybe Klobuchar now being kind of a backup just in case. And I actually think a Bloomberg Buttigieg ticket is highly likely. I think, you know, I don't think Buttigieg really has. I don't think he has a great chance of defeating Trump, and I think everybody knows it. It's not as if I think everything's planned out in advance. I think a lot of this just happens kind of organically to an extent, with, you know, organically given that. Lots of Jewish money and everything is still involved. But when I say organically, I mean without having an entire script written. But I think the role that Buttigieg is playing, and Klobuchar to an extent, is just to keep the Bernie locomotive from becoming unstoppable before Super Tuesday, and then Moneybags Mike Bloomberg will swoop in and probably get enough delegates. He might walk away with a huge number of delegates, but at least get enough delegates to then be the anti-Sanders alternative.
To broker the convention.
Could be
and
a broker
I think
convention.
At this point, you could be exactly a prophet in regard to the potential for a Bloomberg Buttigieg ticket. There are simply too many so-called coincidences here. For example, this mayor of Austin, Steve Adler, who happens to be Jewish, by the way, we start looking into his background, and it's clear that he is promoting Buttigieg very heavily, which is certainly his right to do so. But when you look at what happened in Iowa and the Seth Klarman Israeli connection in Iowa, and you look at the way that the Texas Tribune has been giving Buttigieg some pretty good coverage, we learn that Steve Adler, the current mayor of Austin, was from 2009 to 2012. He was the board chair of the Anti-Defamation League Austin region, where he contributed to the creation of the Austin Hate Crimes Task Force.
This is Adler?
This is Steve Adler, the mayor of Austin, and expanding the No Place for Hate anti-bullying program to schools throughout Central Texas. In 2010, he joined the board of Girls Empowerment Network, formerly GEN Austin. I have not looked extensively yet at that organization, but I have a suspicion as to what I will find. And then Adler was on the board of directors of the Texas Tribune in 2009 and was a later appointed board chair, and then he resigned from that in January 2014 in order to launch his run for mayor of Austin, Texas. But all of these different things keep coming up in regard to people with Jewish, Israeli, Anti-Defamation League, Southern Poverty Law Center, LGBTQ connections, or some combination of those, involved. And that when you look at this situation that has transpired since Iowa, I'm absolutely convinced that Buttigieg is simply the one primary candidate left who is checking the...
Before I have, I've never lost it.
Driving down the highway with you nestled by my side, tasting your sweet perfume in the air, heading for the turnoff
That's known as...
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing. Knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Hey, is that a new music app?
Yeah, check it out. Surfer Music Discovery. It links to thousands of online stations, but the twist is you see the song names and artists that are now playing live.
That's different. No guessing. Looks like a waterfall of music.
So many formats. Rock, oldies, country, R&B, jazz, and a whole lot more.
How's that spelled?
Surfer. S-U-R-F-R.
Is it expensive?
It's free. No need to sign up or sign in.
Get the Surfer Music app free from Google Play or the App Store.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Welcome back to the show. That was, of course, Eddie Arnold, which is, I think, Mark, is one of your favorites. Country singer who had a great deal of appeal outside the country music scene, right?
Yeah, I think it's entirely factual to say that he was the ultimate godfather, as it were, of the country pop crossover phenomenon.
Yeah. Okay, so back to Klobuchar and Buttigieg and what's going on over there.
Yes, in terms of Texas, by the way, a couple of additional things are interesting. On April of last year, April 14th, Steve Adler of Austin gave the introductory speech at Pete Buttigieg's announcement of his candidacy for president. The other thing that is quite fascinating to read is that Adler has a foreign policy background. Now, he graduated from Princeton with a BA, but he went on to, in terms of that BA, that one was a specialized one at the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs.
Okay.
So when you look at those kinds of connections and background, it's quite fascinating. Again, looking at Steve Adler, Buttigieg, of course, Glenn Maxey, and going back with all these articles we've been citing since April 16th, and then this business of Klarman and Israel and acronym and shadow in Iowa in regard to the obvious manipulation of Iowa Democratic Caucus results. It really is quite an interesting thing. By the way, Steve Adler first lived in Washington, D.C., grew up in Kensington, Maryland. Mm-hmm. Father was a World War II veteran with the U.S. Navy, who later became a film editor with CBS News. So he's got a fascinating background. And again, all of this seems to be coming to the fore now in regard to what a Democratic Party insider in my extended family, whose name I can't use, told me off the record that their reading of all of this is that Buttigieg is exactly doing what you so suggest, Dr. Slattery. He is stopping the Sanders momentum. Mm. All of this manipulation we have seen thus far underscores that that is, in fact, what he's doing. He's done it with some degree of success, but ultimately he may be holding the horses for Bloomberg on the 3rd of March. And if Bloomberg really, really comes out of this thing on the 3rd of March with the vast majority of those Super Tuesday delegates, up to as many as a third necessary for nomination, then it could be that the fix has been in, not in terms of Buttigieg ultimately running at the head of the ticket, but having a Bloomberg Buttigieg ticket, that you have a Jew at the head of the ticket, someone who has heavy links to the Jewish Zionist lobby in the number two spot. They cover the cultural Marxist issues very well, with Buttigieg especially. And then, of course, Bloomberg gives us the sense, when you watch his ads, he looks respectable, sounds respectable, and he has the Wall Street business connections that would seem to go well in a matchup with Donald Trump. So this is the way I'm starting to think this may well go.
Okay. Hey, so have you heard the recently released or leaked or re-leaked audio of Bloomberg speaking to some group? I can't remember what group he was talking about, but saying, well, basically, all, you know, 95% of crime and murders is committed by young minorities, and if you want a profile or what, I can't remember exactly the words he was using. And what he was saying was more or less correct. I don't know about 95%, but he was speaking, and of course this has been leaked out, and you wonder who's doing the leaking, because I would think a lot of the Democrats, a lot of the usual suspects, would look at Bloomberg as kind of being the white knight riding in to or the cavalry riding in to save the day.
Yeah, and that is exactly my reading of the situation. And although Donald Trump was saying that he would much rather run against Bloomberg than Sanders, I watched the president saying that in a public press conference, based upon what the president termed the, you know, particularly energized character of Sanders supporters and activists. I suspect that maybe the president might be whistling in the dark on that. Mm. Maybe what he is really concerned about is Bloomberg. Mm. There are a number of people who believe that that presents Bloomberg the biggest threat to the GOP, and that a Bloomberg Buttigieg ticket, as we have discussed before the break, seems to cover a lot of bases with a lot of people, both in the Democratic Party as well as in a general election where, you know, Rush Limbaugh, and we put this up on our big board at nationalbugle.com, the CNN is today all over Rush for saying that America was not quite ready to elect a homosexual, a practicing homosexual, to the American presidency, referring to Buttigieg. Whether that's true or not, it's caused a lot of outrage on CNN, especially given the fact that Rush recently got the Medal of Freedom from Trump. But in this particular case, it may well be that the American public maybe is not ready for that. I don't know. But they might be entirely ready if Buttigieg is the number two guy and they feel that they're voting for Bloomberg.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, was the American public really ready for Dan Quayle, for instance? Do people actually – how much does a number two – you know, the number two person on the ticket really matter? All they're supposed to do is carry their home state at best. All right, we'll be right back.
Anytime you're feeling lonely, anytime you're feeling blue.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website,
by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. This product is superb. I have been taking it for about a year now, and I can feel my cardiovascular system run like a Swiss watch. I definitely recommend this product for anyone that has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heart palpitations. A+. It's potent, but it works. I have been waking up for the past 3 years with numb hands. And a week into using Extendivite, my numb hand seemed to have cleared up. My circulation was off, and now it's back on track. So I'm happy. I feel so energized, and I have my husband on it now. My mother-in-law has cholesterol problems, so I bought her a bottle as well. Thank you so much. Love the product. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Hey, honey, I'm home.
I grabbed the newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
The newspaper? Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, a majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper does not give out the important attention on what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
You say you want me back again. That's the time I'll come back home to you.
Okay, we are back, and just before the break, walking down memory lane with Dan Quayle, who he was only 40 years old when he ran for vice president, 40 or 41. He was really young. You would think that a former vice president who's in his mid-40s would look towards some sort of political future, might run for president. He never ran for president, never even really seemed to be rumored to be running for president.
Well, that's right. And of course, diverting to that just for a moment, I think the real story on Dan Quayle becoming George Herbert Walker Bush's VP choice in 1988 was related to some things that were exposed about Jack Kemp in particular that we won't go into on the air right now, where Mr. Bush felt that Quayle was the safer choice in regard to shoring up Mr. Bush's flagging numbers with conservatives in his own party. But I met Dan Quayle when he was first elected to the... Yeah, I met Dan Quayle when he was first elected to the U.S. House of Representatives in Indiana, and I was a college finishing up my senior year at Valparaiso University in Indiana, and I ran into Dan Quayle up on Capitol Hill. We spent some time chatting in his office. A real nice guy. I mean, I frankly liked him personally, but I think at the same time, that when we look at Dan Quayle's history from 1988 onward, I think without being cruel to the guy, it was pretty clear that he was not presidential timber in the minds of the American public. And I also think that by 1992, George Herbert Walker Bush was in such trouble with the conservative wing, the nationalist wing of his own party, that the effect of the Buchanan campaigns in 92 and in 96, basically 92 finished off George Herbert Walker Bush in terms of the general election. I think both 92 and 96, Quayle was not a factor in 96 because I think the public basically wrote him off after Bush departed the scene in 92.
And obviously with Bush Sr. having two kids, he was trying to, he's really trying to groom Jeb for the presidency, but Jeb lost his first gubernatorial election, so George Jr. became the choice. But what chance was Quayle going to have of getting the endorsement of his former boss when you've got Jeb and GW or W in the wings? One last thing about Quayle. Apparently, he was pretty good friends with Al Gore, and they used to, when they were in Congress as very young congressmen, they used to, during little recesses, would go and play basketball together in the congressional gym. So.
Yes, and Quayle, again, I can believe that. Quayle was a personable guy. He was not vindictive. I think he basically had a sense of loyalty to people he worked for. He did have some good traits. I mean, we think of him today entirely in terms of that ill-fated debate with Lloyd Benson in 1988, and Quayle is perceived by the average member of the public as not being particularly sharp upstairs. But I think he basically, in terms of some of his attributes, if you knew the guy at all, he's a pretty decent fellow.
Yeah, and Lloyd Benson, that was a cheap shot. I mean, I knew Jack Kennedy. I was friends with Jack Kennedy. You, Senator, or no Jack Kennedy. That's stupid. But when Bush introduced Dan Quayle, and we really shouldn't dwell on Quayle because he's not very timely, he's not very relevant anymore, but when he was originally introduced and he came up and gave some sort of cheer for George Bush, which was just a bunch of, it was mangled, it was word salad, but it was enthusiastic. And then, of course, he supposedly misspelled potato because he had an E at the end of it, but that was actually an alternate spelling, in years gone by. But I guess the strangest thing was when he said that the Holocaust was like a sad and shameful part of U.S. history, something like that. It's like,
yeah.
You remember that?
Dan was noted for a number of gaffes of that type, which is precisely why we don't see too much of Dan anymore. I feel sorry for him in a lot of respects. He was a decent man. I think he was in over his head in regard to, obviously, being a part of the national political scene.
Yeah, but I mean, is he more gaff-filled than Joe Biden? I mean, geez.
But, no, I don't think so. And I think Quayle is a far less dangerous individual than Joe Biden, because Dan Quayle, there's never been any allegation that he was doing the kinds of things that Biden has been doing with his son in the Ukraine and in China. Dan Quayle, while the liberals are on him from the very beginning because they were trying to get at George Herbert Walker Bush and to elect Dukakis, Quayle, in terms of his personal life, in regard to his business relationships, he is a true believer in the military-industrial complex, and that's kind of sad. And I think he's had a job or has been on the board of directors of a defense contractor or two. But in terms as a human being and as someone who I personally would be more comfortable with than Biden, I choose Quayle. If that was the choice, I don't think anyone has basically questioned Dan Quayle's decency Well, but, your integrity, hey, or the fact that he's sane.
And Quayle, even though he was elected president or vice president 32 years ago, he's younger than Biden. I think he's younger than Trump. Even he's not that old. He would only be.
Well, I saw him recently. When I say recently, after the death of George Herbert Walker Bush, I caught Quayle on a mainstream. I think it was MSNBC. I don't remember. And they had him on in the daytime. Some talk show format, talking about what he remembers of having worked for President Bush. And other than the fact that his hair was salt and peppery, he looked as young as the first time I met him in 1976 on Capitol Hill.
Hey, yeah. By the way, I met Michael Dukakis. He had come to my school for a speech, and I was kind of in charge of getting his, I guess, his drinking water ready and on the podium and this and that. But he seemed exactly like he did on TV. Just, you know, not radiating warmth or anything, but just being kind of like a regular guy, regular nerdy guy, I guess. He seemed okay. I liked him. All right. Well, we've kind of gone astray down memory lane. How are we going to write
with
this?
Dan Quayle. Boy, we went too far down memory lane.
One other thing I remember.
Dan, sorry.
I remember one other thing about Dan Quayle was working in the financial markets during the George Bush presidency. And if anybody wanted to shake up the markets, maybe they had made a bad bet and wanted to get out of their position, they would phone in some sort of rumor that that George Bush had a heart attack. And Jesse Jackson quipped, when I hear that George Bush has a heart attack and I think about Dan Quayle, then I get heart tremors. So that was kind of the thinking at the time.
Poor Dan. Yeah. Well, you know, to me, I think a good way maybe of getting back on track with some of these articles we've been taking a look at as it relates to Pete Buttigieg and as it relates to this overall political situation. Reflect on this for a moment. As you know, Patrick, off air, I was in conversation with Press Television Iran today, just briefly, about President Trump's statements that he did not want the U.S. Senate curbing the president's war powers as it related to Iran. Now, of course, the president hasn't read the Constitution of the United States recently. I don't agree at all with this extrajudicial assassination of Soleimani, General Soleimani, going back to the 3rd of January. I don't agree with these warlike economic sanctions on Iran, since we, not they, pulled out of the treaty that had been agreed to, the P5+1 treaty. So I think the president's been going down the wrong road all along on Iran. This deal of the century with the Palestinians is no deal at all. It's an outrage, and it's an outrage that Jared Kushner is apparently the brains behind, or the lack of brains behind, this so-called deal of the century, which is just so bad from a Palestinian point of view in terms of any integrity or decency or sense of fairness at all, that it's become a totally inflammatory thing in the Middle East and in Palestine specifically to even bring it up. But there you have Trump, who is barking up the wrong tree on Iran. This Soleimani assassination, to me, was just a complete outrage that caused me even to question the president's sanity, much less the Zionist character of his advisors. And then this deal of the century is a catastrophe, obviously. But when you really look at it, if we end up with a Bloomberg-Buttigieg ticket, if the Democratic establishment and the Israeli lobby are in effect successful at ensuring that Sanders is not the nominee, both in terms of what they perceive as potentially his unelectability in a general election, although I think that's unproven, his age and his health are another factor they're concerned about. It's clear to me that they are far less comfortable with what he might do in the Middle East and on the Palestine issue and on the Iran issue than what will be the case with Bloomberg and Buttigieg, especially with Buttigieg having so much inside connection to all of the usual suspects in the deep state and in the Israeli lobby. This would seem to be a time to reflect on the what I think on foreign policy and on this Israeli question and on the Iran situation is a complete lack of a choice in 2020 if it plays this way. I mean, we can vote for Gabbard in our respective state primaries as a protest vote, but that's probably not even going to register on radar at this point. Mm. What do we do in the general election for sure?
Yeah, I have no idea about the general election. I mean, who knows what it's going to be like? You know, you could say, well, it's Trump and Bloomberg. Well, who knows what they're going to be talking about? Trump and Sanders. I mean, Trump and Bloomberg, okay? Is Trump going to try to... I wasn't on Twitter he calling Bloomberg a racist? Is Trump going to double down on criminal justice reform and jobs for blacks and Hispanics? You know, is that the campaign he's going to run? Is he going to outflank Bloomberg on being, you know, more Zionist than the rich Jew? I mean, what's he going to do? And of course, with Bernie Sanders, almost certainly he would make support for Israel into a central pillar of his campaign, and it'd be at all of his rallies, he'd be bragging about having moved the embassy to Jerusalem, and Bernie wouldn't do that. He'd probably move it into the sea, push it into the sea. Who knows? I mean, how ridiculous could it become? But then again, Trump seems to actually perhaps be making a little bit of progress on immigration at long last. So, I mean, who knows?
That is the point. Who knows? And we simply don't know. But at this particular point, the thing that, again, comes into my mind is the fact that in regard to a general election and in regard to issues of war and peace, which, folks, I think is the most critical issue in this election.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, immigration is important.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the economy is important. Yes, the social issues are important to me as a traditionalist and as a Christian and all the rest of it. But if we, in the last analysis, end up with a Republican and a Democratic ticket that are pursuing policies at the behest of Israel that virtually guarantee a wider war in the American and in the Middle East with full American participation, maybe even a world war, at that juncture, what is the point? I don't see this, again, at this juncture, it's not like there's a Eugene McCarthy out there that just on the basis of an issue of war and peace, mm-hmm. in that case, generations ago, the Vietnam War, that you go out and vote for as a, you know, just on that issue alone. We don't have that option this time. And it, to me, maybe the real story in 2020 is the extent to which the Zionists, once again, will have this entire thing sewed up with both of the major party nominees.
You know, because we've been walking down memory lane, I want to walk down memory lane this time with Eugene McCarthy. I never met him, and I remember his 68 bid and, you know, seeing him debating Robert Kennedy on TV. And then I actually worked for him in 76 when he ran as an independent and, you know, petitioned to get him on the ballot and this and that. Went and made phone calls on his behalf, you know, all sorts of stuff. I never met him, but I do have an autograph. My mother met him and got him to autograph a book for me. So he autographed a book for me. And he's, you know, he's an interesting character. And I went back and watched the Eugene McCarthy, Robert Kennedy debate on Vietnam. I think Mike Wallace might have been the moderator, but you know something? Compared to Tulsi Gabbard, they were not really the greatest peace candidates. I guess maybe compared to Nixon and Humphrey and Johnson, maybe. But you know, they were both, especially you know, even McCarthy, but especially Kennedy, they were both like, well, we have to leave troops in to do this, and we have to help the South Vietnamese government fight its own fight. They really weren't that great on the Vietnam War. If you just wanted to say, you know, we got to withdraw, that's not what they were saying. So Tulsi Gabbard is much more principled and clear. I mean, she says we have nothing to gain by being over there. Let's just bring the troops home now. So I think she's a great opportunity. I won't blame our people for having squandered the opportunity. I will blame because so many people on the right who otherwise would not be attracted to her at all. I mean, she's gotten way more support from, you know, Ron Paul types than she has from Bernie Sanders types or progressive types. I just, she isn't getting any support from the left, which shows that the peace movement in the left has completely died. I mean, where is it? It's gone.
Absolutely gone. And to me, that's the thing that is so striking as I watch the passivity of the American public. My dad was in the United States Air Force during the Vietnam War. In the last 6 years of his career on active duty, were tied up with Vietnam. I remember being in junior high school in Dayton, Ohio, and watching with great interest these anti-war riots in the streets, the 1968 Democratic National Convention, the whole issue of Johnson, of course, pulling out of the presidential race earlier in the year. You had the RFK and King assassinations. It was a time of great turbulence. But in terms of the war, this was becoming, however you felt about Vietnam then, if you were alive, however you feel about it now, all these years later, the fact is there was some passion and tough debate about it. I can't believe what we are getting ourselves into in this Middle Eastern tragedy.
Let's finish the show with it on the other side of the break.
Money, nobody's talking about it.
Yeah, okay, we'll get back to it on the other side of the break.
The skies are dark and gray. For a week now it's been raining.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future. Welcome welcome back to the show. So we've talked about Buttigieg, but how much fun is it to talk about Buttigieg for a whole show? So we've moved on to memory lane, Dan Quayle, Eugene McCarthy. Now the Vietnam War. So in retrospect, what do you think about the Vietnam War? I was from an anti-war family, although in retrospect, I can understand why people supported the war. I think people supported the war because of how slowly information moved at the time, and I think there was righteous opposition to communism based on what had happened in the 20s and 30s. But the Soviet Yes. Union of the 1960s wasn't the same thing. But information moved so slowly. So in retrospect, I can understand the support for the Vietnam War, even though I think opposition was correct, and a lot of the people opposing the war may well have been opposing it for the wrong reasons. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a very complicated subject, certainly, but I think the whole specter of Soviet communism was very much on people's minds in the 1960s when Johnson sent the 25th Infantry Division from Schofield Barracks, Hawaii, the entire division to Vietnam. That really and the whole tragedy of this major ground involvement there, which was the beginning of every bad thing that happened thereafter. But suffice it to say that in those days, I think that was very much a part of people's thinking in regard to the specter of communism. Now, I'm not totally discounting that, but the sad thing is, when you look at the anti-war left in those days, the anti-war left tended to be, in the average American's mind, associated with many things that those average Americans did not support in the way of drug usage, the hippie movement, Woodstock, and all the rest of that. A lot of middle Americans quailed at that prospect. And so there was not a lot of really intelligent, thoughtful discussion about the merits or demerits of getting involved in this war before Johnson basically used what we now understand was a trumped-up Gulf of Tonkin resolution to get us into this thing. And this gets back again to the Middle East, doesn't it? I don't know how much time we have left in the show.
We have about 90 seconds.
Well, I want people to go back to that Blumenthal article on Seth Klarman and Buttigieg from the Gray Zone. There you will come across Clinton and Obama. There you will come across the...
Which Clinton?
Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. The Democratic National Committee keeping this software quiet in terms of its origins, talking about Robbie Mook, Clinton's former campaign manager, of the co-founder of Defending Digital Democracy, which was involved in this Russia hoax fraud. He co-founded that organization with Mitt Rhodes, a former campaign manager for Mitt Romney, whose public relations company was sued by a Silicon Valley investor after it branded him a quote-unquote agent of the Russian government and a quote-unquote friend of Vladimir Putin. And then as you start continuing to read down into this whole business of acronym, this connections of Seth Klarman to the pro-settler Israeli lobby, Klarman's involvement with the Boston-based Bow Post Group hedge fund, and this whole business of Bauman owning $911 million of the island's bonds. Mm-hmm. Klarman has not only given money to Buttigieg, but to Klobuchar. That's mm-hmm. interesting. And then you keep going down and looking at the Klarman being the principal financier of the Israel Project, right? Mm-hmm. That was Israeli government-linked propaganda organization against the Iran nuclear deal. The Memory, there you have, MEMRI, the American mm-hmm. Jewish Committee, the mm-hmm. David Project, mm-hmm. The Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, the Washington Institute wow. for Near East Policy, and it goes on that's and whole, on and on.
A whole menagerie, a zoo even. Well, that's all
it's
the time.
It's a zoo.
That's all the time. It's a Jew zoo. That's all the time we have
and
today.
And it's a Jew zoo that it basically appears to be in the process of hijacking the Democratic Party nominating process so that they can send their version of Donald Trump on foreign policy mm-hmm. into the arena against him in the general election.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me again, Mark. It's always a pleasure to have you on. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Talk right. the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names, and online digital shows in one place. TalkRight makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download TalkRight today from Google Play or the App Store.
Hey, is that a new music app?
Yeah, check it out, Surfer Music Discovery. It links to thousands of online stations, but the twist is you see the song names and artists that are now playing live.
That's different. No guessing. Looks like a waterfall of music.
So many formats. Rock, oldies, country, R&B, jazz, and a whole lot more.
How's that spelled?
Surfer. S-U-R-F-R.
Is it expensive?
It's free. No need to sign up or sign in.
Get the Surfer Music app free from Google Play or the App Store.
Listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.